Biggs Museum curator Ryan Grover says William D. White needs to be rescued from obscurity. To that end, the art institution has been working in earnest for 2 years to launch the White Retrospective with the help of Middletown artist and educator Nancy Carroll Willis, the author of a new biography on the little-known Wilmington native. The lack of notoriety, they contend, has nothing to do with White's talent. Grover says there are many reasons why an artist might fall into obscurity.
And in this situation, he was an individual who really did not try to get himself known in very large fine art circles. He wasn't going after large-scale exhibitions. He wasn't going after large-scale museum shows. He was an illustrator. He was a muralist. He was a portrait painter. He was a landscape artist. He was incredibly varied. But at the same time, he didn't really try to become the ultimate famous artist of America. It really wasn't anything about his personality that went that direction. He lived a deliberate life of almost complete poverty for the majority of his life. He lived in an incredible simple house in the Penny Hill area of Wilmington, Delaware. He just didn't have the interest in society to try and champion or be a champion within society. He really, really preferred to be on the fringes. And not only does that come out in an observation of his career, but it also comes out in the subject matter of his artwork.
White biographer Nancy Carroll Willis grew up in the same neighborhood as William D. White. She says the artist was a beloved figure to the many kids he encouraged to draw and paint at his home in North Wilmington. Willis believes there are several reasons White isn't as known as some of his contemporaries, including his rejection of the Brandywine tradition, which she says he called phony, since many artists use models and stage their paintings.
So while their work was published by Scribners in popular magazines and fiction books, White sought more authenticity, and he went out to paint what he called real life. So his work was not commercially available. But there's another reason that I uncovered in my research that is personal in nature. Evidently, when William White started out, he was somewhat of a dandy. That's how he was described. He would wear a white suit, a white straw Panama hat. There were stories that he hung out at F. Scott Fitzgerald's house and kind of a man about town. Back then, a lot of Wilmington artists were also very good tennis players. And there used to be these exhibition matches at the Wilmington Country Club with well-known tennis players, Rene Lacoste, Bill Tilden. So along the way, William White met tennis player Helen Wills. She was just Helen Wills at the time. She later married Moody. He was about 10 years older than she was, and she was just starting her very famous tennis career. But evidently, she rejected his advances. And after that, as the story goes, no one saw much of him.
White never married and retreated to his family home, which burned to the ground in 1942. The artist then built an adobe-like structure without electricity over the basement of the property. A fan of poet and naturalist Henry David Thoreau, White chose to live a life of volunteer poverty but was looked after by friends and neighbors.
There's one story where he would go to Penny Hill Donuts. This was told by someone who was there when the door opened to the donut shop, but no one came in, and the man turned to close the door, and the owner said, no, just wait a minute. And soon a hand reached in and felt around on a shelf for a bag and picked it up and closed the door and then crawled under the window so as not to be seen. And the owner said, oh, it's just that crazy artist. But every day he would set out a bag of day-old donuts for Mr. White. Things like that. Neighbors made sure that he had oil in his furnace. One neighbor paid his soda fountain tab, his sandwich tab at Brown's Drugstore every month for years. He would go up to Pete's sub shop on the corner and get some of his staples, and he usually bought it what he called on account. And he would give artwork to the friends who helped support him. And some of the artwork that is in this show came from that.
William D. White's artwork was varied, but curator Ryan Grover says the bulk of his career was built on illustration.
And at the time, most illustrators were working for the public press, those press pieces that were finding their way into the home, because, of course, that's the largest readership. It's the largest consumer base. But William White worked for trade magazines, principally out of the Hercules Corporation in downtown Wilmington. And so he added images, hundreds, literally hundreds of images over years, decades. The work that he did for Hercules was very specific because it really talked about labor practices. It talked about industrial products. It talked about mining and explosives. And it was meant specifically for individuals that were already in the trade, corporations that were buying these explosives materials that were being created by Hercules, or individuals that were in the metals mining industry, whether it be in America or in South America or in parts of Europe. So his scope was international. He was being read everywhere, but he was being read by a very, very specific group of individuals. We feel like he had a readership of tens of thousands of people, probably, but they wouldn't have purchased these magazines on the corner drugstore, but they would have been sort of receiving them as part of incentives to keep buying the Hercules products.
One of the images White created for the Hercules Company in 1926 is part of the exhibition and the cover of the exhibition catalog, Night Shift on Broad Street.
It really is William White through and through. William White seemed to gravitate and created a career largely over images of laborers, of the disenfranchised, of the individuals on the fringes, of the people that are not necessarily receiving the greatest public attention in the periods of the 1920s up through the 1950s. And so over this 40-year period, he has this range of images of people of color, individual laborers, children, individuals within society that you may not necessarily be paying an enormous amount of attention. And the way that he treats them in these paintings, he really sort of elevates them to almost a sort of religious idealism. He places the figures directly in front of the picture plane. They're dead center. You can see every little nuance about them. And they are glorious. They are powerful. They are strong, strong characters. And so this painting is kind of a signature to that whole emphasis. It has the Philadelphia skyline in the background. It's a night scene. It's these beautiful colors of teal. And there's this really strong, very, very emotionally impactful African-American laborer in the center. And he looks almost Michelangelo-esque. He's just beautiful and broad-shouldered and just incredibly powerful character. And obviously the artist is really, really sympathetic, not only to what this person is going through on a regular basis, but he wants us to sort of identify with this individual at a time when a lot of artists weren't challenging their audiences to do that.
Grover says White was an artistic champion of the working class. His work for Hercules led to an assignment with mining trade magazine, The Explosives Engineer. The national publication was read widely and led to a commission out west with the Phelps Dodge Mining Company.
So White, in 1923, at the age of 27, got on a train and went to Bisbee, which at the time was the largest city between St. Louis and San Francisco. It was a booming copper mining town, and he toured the Copper Queen mine there in Bisbee and the Sacramento Pit mine also in Bisbee, and they also sent him down to northern Mexico to document the Pilares de Nacazari mine there. And the interesting thing about these paintings is they really show a combination of things. They show his academic training, for one thing, but they also show his sympathy for the American workers who worked backbreaking jobs in dangerous industries, often in sweltering heat. So he uses a different color palette for each series of paintings. The underground miners at the Copper Queen mine, he uses a kind of warm purple browns and reds. And the Mexican workers at the Sacramento Pit mine that is above ground, it's an open pit copper mine, he uses bright pinks and warm purples. And then the Mexican workers in Pilares de Nacazari, he's using cool blues and greens and crisp bright whites. And he's always positioning his miners to feature their strength, their endurance, their sort of, you get the feeling that, you know, they have the capacity to overcome all of these conditions and sort of dominate their landscape.
Ryan Grover says White's forays into mines, subway tunnels, and domains of the working class can be viewed as somewhat of a window into a bygone era.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that sort of stands out about William White is that he really did embrace this notion of social realism in art at a time when a lot of illustrators weren't. Illustration is really sort of a glorification of the human figure to kind of create these very enticing sort of illustrative moments, usually fiction, pieces of fiction. William White was all about the common man. He was all about trying to represent in the best possible way individuals that his readers, those consumers of these industrial products, would be able to identify with, and therefore glorify the corporation. So there's a kind of interesting sort of nuance to him because he really does bring social realism into an industry that really didn't have a lot of it. And for that reason, in terms of the Brandywine tradition of illustration, people like Frank Schoonover and Howard Pyle, he really stands out as something pretty unique and something that's really, I think, worthy of taking a really close examination of.
For Nancy Carroll Willis, the exhibition is the culmination of a project she began in 1971 as a student at the University of Delaware when she began to wonder about the artist she met as a child.
It's very rare that we have an opportunity to rediscover anyone, an artist in particular, who is this high quality and this interesting a person. He really deserves critical acclaim.